What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan here, and today I have my buddy Jaden Bales back on. You've been on a couple of times now.
Yeah, you bet. I really enjoy just BSing with you a little bit on here, and I listen to a bunch of your Rockcast, so I love being on and talking with you. It's a good podcast you got going on.
Awesome. Thanks, dude. Well, we love having you on. So we're going to have you on again today, and we are going to talk about something a little bit different than we have been. I think we're going to dive into some mule deer scouting stuff later, but you work in Wyoming for the Wildlife Federation.
Yep.
And so we were talking about it, I don't know, a couple weeks ago about getting more involved with things. And so I thought we'd just have you on and you could talk about how people get more involved in some of these meetings, because it sounded like there haven't been very many people at the meetings when you're there.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's back this up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And have you seen the threads that go on about hunter tag numbers being cut, or like the 90-10 bill in Wyoming and all this stuff on Rockslide?
I have not yet.
Okay. Well, if you go there, one, it's warning, it's a little bit of a dumpster fire, right? Like this stuff, when people end up talking about how tags are allocated and all this stuff on social media or on forums, man, it just seems to go to crap in a handbasket. Like I very rarely see a whole lot of really thoughtful comments on these things, but nonetheless, it's a major conversation. There's really great information out there for people to actually, instead of keyboard warrioring, like get involved in the Game and Fish Commission's. Most states, that's how they run them. You know, they call it, you know, Colorado Parks and Wildlife mm-hmm. Commission or whatever the case is. You know, each state has one of these things. And I just figured, man, people should look to get involved in these things and actually make their voices heard, because they're listening. They're paying attention to comments. I was just at the commission meeting here in Wyoming that set the seasons for 2021. And there was hardly any members of the public commented in general, and zero members of the public who weren't in that room and paid by an NGO commented on the season setting. You know, we're talking like people are non-residents are getting tags cut to go to these regions, and people aren't commenting on it. You know, like I'm just like that. You get what you get if you're not involved in the process. So now, if you lose it when something that you're really passionate about, when you're involved in the process, then I think that you kind of have a little bit more of a leg to stand on. But it's frustrating, you know, when you see all these keyboard warriors out here. And I'll admit I've contributed to some of it, you know, I'm not one to, you can't blame too, but there are a lot of better ways to get involved with the people making the decisions. So, that's a little bit of a soapbox there, and why I kind of was hoping we could touch base a little bit, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I think my first question to go along with that is just, what is the best way, like me wanting to know what's going on in Wyoming, what's the best way for me to find that information?
You know what? So obviously I work for an organization that tries to keep hunters and anglers up to date, right? Like that's my job, is sending emails about, you know, like, oh man, this regulation is changing here, or the public comment period is open there. But you don't need to have a Wyoming Wildlife Federation to be tuned in. I stay really up to date with what the heck Idaho has going on, just because I'm subscribed to their emails. I know everyone's like, I don't want to like get more emails in my inbox, but go create a freaking little folder that's just game and fish agencies or something, because they are communicating this information pretty darn good. I mean, they do, like Idaho, the poorest one I've seen is Oregon, but even then they do a pretty good job. You know, Oregon, for instance, just cut, or is proposing to cut their over-the-counter Rocky Mountain elk seasons, archery seasons, right? They just cut their mule deer seasons with a bow that were over the counter. And you know what? The public can be involved all along the way. There's opportunities, and people are getting, you know, I get those emails when they come out and when those public comment periods are out, and whether or not I really put a whole bunch of time into it, you know, it's something that if I have a passionate feeling about a thing, I go comment on it when they email you. So that's like step one is try to tune in on that stuff. That's easy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So what's going on in Wyoming right now?
Oh, so Wyoming in particular, Wyoming is a state that's highly like impacted by the state of the weather and climate and whatever happens during the winter largely. So in Wyoming, we saw a big decrease this year in antelope tags. I had some antelope, two antelope doe tags here right outside my back door last year. And they've taken this group of this herd unit, this group of units out here and just taken all of the doe tags off the table because the antelope tags are not doing good. And that's in this local area, that was like 600-700 doe tags. So that's pretty significant. And you'll see other places around the state are doing something similar where they're trying to just make sure to give these antelope a little bit more of a leg up this next year. Because if anyone had been paying attention about what happened in the Rocky Mountain front, you know, in this kind of northern, especially northern Rocky Mountain area, man, we got that March snow that just destroyed a bunch of antelope on the winter range. So places like, I know you got a bunch of snow, but places like Cheyenne and Casper, Wyoming, like we're talking a couple feet of snow plus drifts. And that's when like the antelope are at their lowest point already. And there's actually this article. Oh, this is terrible. There's this article of these antelope got stuck between like a roadway that had been plowed out and they just got mowed over. Yeah. I don't remember how many it was, but it was a whole herd. So that's something that should be on people's radar, especially as you come up to that antelope draw, which is May 31st this year, I think, or June 1st.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming right up. It's interesting to see how they're setting their tags. I've got a buddy that works for Wyoming Game and Fish, and we were talking about Idaho opening up their application period December 1st. Mm-hmm. How from a management perspective, like how does that work when all these states are setting their quotas like now? Versus, you know, Idaho setting their quota December 1st, basically, before that.
You know, and I don't know the exact specifics on Idaho as to like how that situation plays out, but I can tell you based on what Wyoming does and kind of what I've seen across the West, it seems like what they do is either A, they set quotas for the following year. I know like in Oregon, they've done that in the past. And then in that 2016, 2017 winter, they made emergency quota cuts after the seasons had been set. I remember that was a big deal because in some of those units where I grew up, they were cutting mule deer tags, 30 and 40, 50% well after the quotas kind of for the new year had been set. So, most of the time, I think that's what Idaho is doing is they set those quotas in advance.
I see.
A year. Then you have Wyoming who tries to do it the same year, you know, like the most recent year's information. And that's also why you get that crazy long delay between that non-resident elk, application.
Yeah.
Cause they want to be like, hey, everyone, you know, you should apply for elk by January 31st. And there's a couple factors there, but then they still go through this whole season setting process and, which was just completed. Like I was in the room with the vote on Wednesday, the 21st. I'm making sure I'm not lying to you. Yeah, that was the 21st. So I was in the room on the vote on the 21st of April, right? And that's friggin', was that 3 months after the applications were due? And so then they kind of divvy up the quotas based on that.
I see. Okay.
The other thing is, those elk hunters, just pro tip, those elk hunters who, if they've had season changes done since this recent setting meeting, you can still modify your application. So there were some new hunts that were created this year. So this is a pro tip to go look at the new hunts that were created in Wyoming and maybe some of them might tickle your fancy. So go check those out.
Oh man, that's interesting how they're doing that. Was there any major changes that you want to say as far as like any seasons cut off or anything?
Some interesting stuff, especially in the deer department. So like there are quota changes in antelope and I don't think you see people really get too up in arms. It's going to create some point creep for non-residents. Residents is going to make it a little harder to draw some tags where they've decreased, but there were some increases in places where they could too. So just check that out as you're applying. And that's important. As far as deer go though, man, there's let's see if I can tally it up here real quick for you in like a one glance. I bet you there was 10 units where they added a 4-point or better restriction on mule deer.
Ooh, I've been waiting for that.
The, anything in that southwest corner from Bags, which is a really popular area, Area 82, on over to Evanston and up to Kemmerer. If you all are looking on a map, that includes the southern end of Region G. They added a 4-point or better restriction. So that's some big stuff, man. That's going to make, you know, one, we see that in the harvest stats, fewer people are going to go hunting in those areas. It like reduces people's interest in hunting deer there. But then obviously, you know, it makes it kind of harder to find a buck if you're just kind of out meat hunting. So
yeah,
it goes.
Yeah, exactly. There's some different schools of thought there. I've been able to hunt kind of around that area for the last, I think, 2 years now. And it's interesting to me, like, the amount of non-resident people there that have burned 7 points. And then all the residents can just get an over-the-counter tag. And there's so many people. It's a interesting dynamic around there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, though? We've talked about this. I do the Rich Outdoors Muley Mondays, and we've talked about this a little bit more in depth. But, like, yeah, the biggest deer in the state consistently are coming out of there in that G area. Like, yeah. It's no secret, right?
It's no secret.
Wonder, no wonder it takes so many points, right?
Yeah.
But like, if you value your hunt experience, you know, it's probably going to make a lot of people really upset, you know, about what they go in there and see. Cause it's not like you're burning your 8 points and you're going to go in there with every Tom, Dick and Harry and fight for the deer that you can find. So, you know, it's not the premium experience that you might find in other states, like a Utah or Colorado, with those kinds of point preference levels.
Mm-hmm. You know. Gotcha. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I feel bad for, you know, the guys around there that are just, you know, meat guys going out with their kids, and now they're going to have to probably travel a bit to get outside of that 4-point restriction. Or just have to hunt way more. Yeah,
absolutely. That is exact. And when you look at the kind of history of these restrictions, man, it just makes people hunt way harder if they're going to go hunting. And you know, that's actually not that great as far as the older age class bucks, right? If people are hunting really hard for 4.5 or 3.5 year old deer, that reduces the amount of 4.5, 5.5 year old deer the following year, you know, and that just, that does put a lot of pressure on those bucks that could be, you know, a little bit bigger.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we were talking about it in the point creep episode that we did. He made a really good point. He's like, you know, you have to look at what these states are trying to do and what they're being dealt with. Like, they've got hunters from all over the spectrum in such high demand, and they're trying to figure out how to make it fair for everybody and still have deer for next year and still keep those populations in check. So it's quite the monster to tackle. It's just not, it's not that simple.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's hard. You're always trying to balance something. And I think, you know, the people probably listening to Rockcast, are pretty tuned up to like try to shoot a more mature deer, or elk or antelope or whatever the case is, right? You want to shoot a bigger critter, likely. And the vast majority of the hunting public is not that way. They just, you know, if you do a survey of the general hunter, they just want to go, you know, they just want to fill the freezer. So we have to always remember that we're managing for the whole populace and not just kind of what we like to see.
Right. Yeah. I think that's when those units that are like, you know, opportunity units and then let's say trophy potential units really come into play.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So. While we're kind of on this subject, I just pulled up the draft regulations. I was like, these are set in stone now. And maybe we can dive into what I saw at the meeting too.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So for regions, I'm just going to go through this cause I assume that the majority of people who listen aren't going to be Wyoming residents. Region A lost 250 tags. Region B lost 150 tags. Region K lost 50, Region M lost 200, Region W lost 150, and Region X lost 100 tags. So, I'm not sure tallying that up. I'm not going to try to do the mental math while I'm talking with you, but yeah, there's some cuts there to those non-residents. And, you know, I think the non-residents could get involved in that, you know, and if anything, maybe non-residents could get involved with trying to help, you know, come up with some better solutions for what's happening with mule deer on the landscape. But that's just some good information to know there.
Yeah, that's really good information. Is there anything else kind of on that front that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, so this is, I think it probably is worth mentioning, and not, maybe not going in too deep, but there's this bill in Wyoming. It's been put forth, I think, 4 years in a row to try to change the non-resident resident split 90-10. Right now it's 80% of the tags go to residents, 20% go to non-residents, and actually 75-25 for the moose, sheep, goat. And so Wyoming residents are like wanting to move this back to, or move it to 90-10. And you're sitting in these meetings and you know what, like non-residents are the ones who are engaged in this thing. And if the non-residents weren't engaged in it, I would imagine this thing would have passed a while ago. The Guides and Outfitters are also really involved too.
Yes, but I would imagine.
Yeah. The resident hunters themselves haven't been very engaged. And what we saw at the commission meeting was the Game and Fish Commission president goes, you know, I'm kind of used to seeing a whole binder of comments here. Like we should, when they're implementing 12 units of 4-point restrictions, like there's usually a lot of people talking about it. Right. And I made my comment, but obviously it's for work. Right. So, it's just, you know, the commission even commented on how few people were providing feedback here. So I just, oh man, people got to get involved. If they want to go hunting and want to affect their opportunities, like go get like tuned in and go try to, you know, make your voice heard. And I'm sure that person would also learn a lot along the way of how these things are managed and ran. So,
how it works. Yeah. I think that'd be really good knowledge to know. How are you, just with Wyoming in general, how are you looking up the information that you're giving us on their website?
Oh, so it's the news section. So, Wyoming Game and Fish is, wgfd.wyo.gov. And when you're here on the website, the main page, I just went back to it because obviously I've got a bunch of stuff bookmarked or whatever. And the very top, it says news in the upper left. You can kind of see what's happening across the state. You know?
Nice.
The second article here, Game and Fish Commission finalizes season hunting season quotas. That's right where it is. Yeah.
Yep. Perfect. All right. Just thought I'd point that out just so everybody can get to it maybe a little quicker. And I just think it's a really important thing. I need to be better about it where I live. And, you know, just checking in and seeing what's going on. I think Nebraska just random knowledge, I guess, they're upping their prices for everything. So now a turkey tag's like 140 some bucks, and it used to be 90, I think.
Jeez, that seems like for a non-resident, I would assume.
Yep, for non-resident, yep. Mm-hmm.
And if I remember right, your resident prices are pretty high too, aren't they?
I want to say 30 bucks. I didn't get a turkey tag this year, so I'm not sure. But
doing too much guiding or what?
30. Too much guiding, you know? That's what we can chalk it up to. Yeah, trying to just not shoot a bunch of birds before the clients get here. They seem to appreciate that.
I'm surprised more clients don't let you do the old 1, 2, 3. I'll do that with you.
The 1, 2, 3? Yeah, yeah. No, we've never really done that. That's funny.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, hey, here's a, you know, on a brighter note, at least for Wyoming and folks, because I know that we just kind of were talking about all these tag cuts and crazy stuff going on with Wyoming's deer and antelope. There are 2,000 new elk tags in the state. So go check those out too.
That's awesome. Yeah. Everybody needs to check that out.
if anyone tunes into these conversations, and maybe this is the same way in Nebraska, I know it's the same way in Colorado and in Montana. Clearly we need a lot. We need a whole bunch more people killing whitetails and cow elk. So if there's plenty of, you know, we're all over here bitching about not being able to draw tags in different states, but gosh, yeah, dang it. If you want to be a cow elk hunter, now is the time.
Right. I know. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. There's still plenty of cow tags available, and it seems like doe tags for some reason are becoming harder to find, but there's still plenty of opportunity out there, even though I was just on a podcast with Trail Kreitzer from Go Hunt, and we were talking about that, just with like Montana just saw a 30% jump in non-resident tag apps for this year. And so we were talking about just, you know, the amount of people coming into the field and whatnot, and how even some of the people that I know saw so many people last year in the high country that they've never seen before, that they're like, we're bouncing, like we're going somewhere else.
Are you going to do anything differently, like because of how many more people you're running into?
You know, I'm personally not, probably. Some of the reason being, I didn't like get to hunt for myself at all last year or go to any of my spots. I was filming the entire year. So I will say that there was a couple hunts that I filmed that was a lot more people in that area than I've seen before, for sure. But for me, no, I'm gonna just continue as normal this year, and then we'll kind of see how that goes and start restructuring for next year.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to go hunting for yourself for once?
I am, for once. I actually, dude, big, well, did I tell you about the sheep hunt?
No.
Oh boy. I get to go to the Brooks Range and shoot a doll sheep in August.
Whew. Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Congrats on that. That's going to be super fun.
Yeah, it's going to be good. So we're going to get that. That's going to be like the first, well, about middle part of August. And then when I get back from that, I get to go film a bighorn sheep hunt in Wyoming for the governor tag holder. So that'll be good. Just a year of sheep.
Yeah, no kidding. So are you going to do any archery hunting?
I am. So I got online I got online in December and got an Idaho tag. So I'm going to have an Idaho deer tag this year, and I'll just get an archery stamp so I can hunt that September season with that. And then I'll have it, that season opens, I think, in October. If I don't get one with my bow and go do that. And then we put in for fourth season elk this year too in Colorado. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Are you in this cold bow challenge too on Rock Slide?
Dude, I was just going to talk to you about that. No, I am not. They won't let the rock staff enter. I think that the rock staff should participate, but we've just been busy with turkeys and such, so I haven't got into it.
I gotcha. Well, I can very confidently say, so I just finished up my last shot today. And I can very confidently say this thing was the most humbling, unexpectedly humbling little challenge that I have done in a long time. I posted a little bit about like what my groups look like at 50 yards with, you know, shooting in the middle of a practice session with field points. And then when I pulled out my, you know, cold bow for the five broadhead shots, oh, it's just demoralizing. So I think everyone should go try this at some point. And I was talking to Travis Hobbs about it, and he said that it has changed how he practices before season. Instead of sitting out there just drilling groups, he shoots one arrow a day for like the entire month before season.
Dude,
it's important.
Yeah, that's good. Probably makes you focus a little bit more, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I found out. Yeah. And you're just, you know, if you make one very small, slight change on accident, that one shot, you know, it could be the game changer, right? I mean, I was drifting out of my housing, like not getting my housing and my peep sight lined up perfectly, and was drifting out high. So, you know, It's good. It's really good stuff. So I'm glad you guys got that cold bow challenge going. And I think there's still some slots open.
Oh, is there? I haven't looked at it since they opened it. They must open that. I'm pretty sure Robbie and I talked about it a week and a half ago. So they opened it last Saturday. So it's been open for a week. I think there's 200 slots.
I see 195 comments on the thread. So you're getting kind of close, I guess.
Yeah, pretty close. So there's Robbie and I talked about it in a Tipsy Tuesday a couple weeks ago, and right before it opened, and the prizes in that thing this year are pretty crazy. There's a lot of really good prizes if you want to shoot in that thing. And it is kind of like a competition, but not really. I mean, it's a lot of everything gets, a lot of the prizes get drawn.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And let me just say, I've got my paws on one of these Maven RF rangefinders, which is one of the prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sweet.
It's nice.
It's a little bit big. Yeah. No, it doesn't like perfectly fit in my little pouch from the previous rangefinder I had, but it is dang nice. It is super user friendly. So it's a sweet, that's a sweet prize. That'd be the one I wanted if I didn't have one already.
Yeah. If you didn't already have one. I know that Marsupial has already made a new rangefinder pocket for that thing. They just made a larger one that fits the Maven, the new one. So
I was scoping that thing out. It's only $32. So I got to get one. I got no excuse.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, for sure. So what's your deer situation look like this year?
Oh, I've got, let's see, I've got an app in Utah. But I was kind of swinging for the fences on that one. And, honestly, like with kind of some of the seasons structure that we have in Wyoming, and I'm also going to Oregon to hunt elk with my dad and my brother. I'm burning my 10 points there to get us all three into a hunt. So, but that's during prime Colorado time, or else I'd have tried to get a tag there. So yeah, it's basically just Wyoming, and maybe we can get it in Utah or something. Oh yeah, that'll be fun though. I'm so excited to go spend some time with my dad, my brother, man. If we get an elk, that'll be way worth it. You know, well, it'll be worth it whether we don't get one, but you know, one is really, that would make the trip.
So. Yeah, man, that's going to be a blast. It's so fun. Like, you know, going on solo hunts has its own little, you know, funness to it, I guess. Going with buddies has its own little thing. But then going with family, especially if you've been going with them for a while or you grew up doing that, it's like a little extra.
Oh, totally. Yeah, my brother and I, we've had deer tags together before. And my dad and I have never rifle elk hunted together. So, let alone my brother and I. So this is all, it's all going to be just this big, you know, one big trip for us while we toast all these points. So I sure wish Colorado would let you do that same thing where you can party up and split points. Cause that would make Colorado just that much more fun.
Right. I've always kind of wondered why there's more states that don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how it came to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did hear in Nevada that a lot of great grandmas were building up points they didn't ever intend on using. So,
oh yeah,
that's part of it, I think. But
yeah. What? So with like, let's say your Wyoming tag, what are you doing right now to prepare for that scouting wise?
Well, first of all, it's spring bear season. So I got to do a little spring bear hunting before I totally prepare.
Yeah.
but no, while I'm out there, I'm actually, you know, some of these spring bear spots are, you know, I'm going in there and I'm glassing them with the mind that I want to go hunt here for deer. Now that's not perfect for every spot, but in particular, I've got this one canyon that I've wanted to deer hunt last year that I never went in there to scout it or anything. And there's a bunch of snow in there right now, but I'm excited to get in there and sit down and glass and see how the deer use that country. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of this stuff, at least where I'm at, there's it's steep and it's gnarly country with a lot of rocks and, you know, little drainages with little bits of timber. And that's the stuff I'm really focusing on trying to learn and trying to find out how to get away from folks. especially right here in Lander, there's a big climbing community. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like figuring out where these yahoos can get to and go climbing and then, you know, trying to get away from that while also considering like where the hunting pressure is going to be. And so really just analyzing that the country right now is what I'm really focusing on. So that when it comes to scouting season, I'm up there, I'm on the glass and knob and I'm doing my thing. Like the logistics are done, you know, the logistics are dialed in.
Yep. And that's most of it. And I tell people that all the time, like your logistics are the biggest part. Like even if, you know, if you have a tag out west this fall and you want to go scouting or you want to take like an extended weekend during the summer and go scouting or something like that. I mean, I really think it's worth your time to just get on a plane and burn out here, rent a car, go flip around your area a little bit. And just like by learning the roads and knowing what the trailheads look like and having an idea for access points, like it puts you so far ahead of just, you know, trying to save a little bit of time and money and skipping that and then getting into your unit during season. And then it's chaos. And then you only have, you know, 7 days to hunt or 5 days to hunt. You're burning at least one just trying to learn where you should go, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's so good. And you know, I talk to these guys who don't go scout, who don't scout Colorado, for example. Here's my example. You know, Montana's probably in the same boat, right? Yeah, because it's a rut hunt. Yeah, no doubt you don't have to go scout it.
Yeah.
But if you're putting all of your eggs in this 5 days or whatever, you know, and you don't know how long it takes to get to the top of your glass knob or like how long it takes or where you can go camp, like that makes a major difference. And that's kind of why, like, you know, last year I scouted my Colorado hunt. Not that it was this uber successful hunt, but it was like my logistics were dialed so that when I was there, then you're just kind of focused on finding the deer. Because as you know, and I think as everyone has talked about, like if you're walking to your glassing knob and it's shooting light, you've kind of fudged up. You've missed it, you know?
Oh, and, absolutely. Yeah. And getting up there and being like, okay, this is, you know, on Google Earth, this is where I wanted to glass from. And then you get there and it's not, it's never like you think it's going to be. Nothing is ever like you think it's going to be, especially off of Google Earth. And then you're like running up and down the ridge trying to find a better glassing point when you should be sitting and glassing. And, yeah, it's just it's quite the deal. I've heard a lot of stories, and even though they might have been really good trips, one thing I always thought was funny is like at the end of the story, it's like just when I started getting things figured out, my trip was over.
Yep. Yeah. Man, that's so true. I feel like whenever I've asked anyone about a place, they're like, right towards the end of the trip, I was getting it dialed, you know. Oh, and that's frustrating. That I, you know, there's also something that is be said about what Robbie says about hunting a place over and over again. Cause if you're just figuring it out at the end of that hunt, go hunt the same one the next year, you know, and then pick up where you left off. I think that there's so much truth in that.
Absolutely. I was funny enough, that hunt that Robbie and I were on, we were talking about different states and different units, and I've been wanting to hunt a state for a long time, and I'll hunt there eventually. But I was going to be limited on time this year. And he said, Jordan, you already know this other place in Wyoming that you can hunt. And you know it. So why are you starting over? Mm-hmm. And yeah, he just kind of had to. And I've told people that before. Like, hunt where you know. Like, I know that in my brain. But I just had like an urge to go do something a little bit different, and he had to reel me back in and say, you don't have very much time.
Oh.
Like, don't start over.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's kind of interesting because you and I talked last year, I think it was when we talked about field judging, about how I had this really nice buck found out. And it was, you know, a 3-hour drive from my house. And so I'd found him one time, right, in my first scout trip. And then I found him again right before season. And then he ghosted me. And you know what? If I had been able to figure out his pattern, because I've lived close and could scout there a couple times, like that makes a huge difference. You know, mm-hmm. hunting out your backyard, it makes a world of difference. And I get really caught into the, like, the grass is always greener notion. And I'm starting to kind of reel that in. You know, hunting is really fun when you get to go on a new adventure, right? Like, I want to go at some point, I want to go check out some Nevada mountain range, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't ever replace what you know. People who really know a place, like, have a huge advantage.
Yeah. And you're just more comfortable in it too. Like, you know, I think sometimes you'll go to a new area and you'll say, you know, this is right where the deer should be. Or maybe even the first day you were there, you saw some deer there. But after day, you know, maybe it was dry for a little while. And then maybe, you know, day four, day five, it's like, I haven't seen a deer there in a few days. You start second guessing, like, maybe I'm in the wrong spot. But if it's a place that you've hunted over and over again, and maybe you've seen deer there over and over again, you're going to stick it out longer because you're like, I know that they're here. Yeah, I don't know. I've done that before to where I've tried to jump areas or like got that grass is greener and just moved, even not very far, but just a little ways. And you start hunting in there and it looks really good. And you might have seen a deer to give you a little bit of hope, and then you don't see him. And then it's like quite the spiral. And I don't think people like really realize how mentally taxing that can get you. It's hard to stay in it sometimes.
Oh, it is. And I look at that film you and Robbie did a couple years back. Like, I cannot imagine just sitting there looking for one deer on that one really hard to glass slope and like knowing he's going to be there somewhere. It just, and I think also if someone, you know, has one of those things and you're like really dedicated to what your goal is, like, that's good. But last year, man, I bailed on my big buck because I was like, I can't stand not getting stocks in. I just want to kill something. So I bailed. But it's hard. It's really hard to stay focused.
Yeah, it is. Here's an interesting question. So those deer that you found last year, was that the first time that you've ever been into that area?
That specific drainage? Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So when you went in there to scout for the very first time, were those deer where you thought they were going to be?
Oh, I did have some insider information, so I can't say that they weren't where I thought they were going to be. They were definitely like that first night I walked in there after, like on a Friday after work, I walked in there and it was just about dark and was able to glass up deer right where I was hoping they would be. I didn't know that there would be a buck that was really nice in there, but they were kind of in the slope. You know, if you do really good e-scouting, I think you can find the slope, where they should be, you know? But the other thing is you're glassing, like, it's a little bit different too, because I'm sitting there on top of this mountain, right? Like in glassing 3 and 4 miles away. So when you're like where they were, you wanted to be, I had a 3 mile buffer from where I wanted them to be.
Yes.
So that also plays a factor. If you're sitting back there and like somewhere along this ridgeline, there should be a deer. That's going to be different than if you go, this meadow should have a deer. So that all played a role.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah. I think that sometimes it can be easy to get caught up in what you think deer country should look like. I got in on that a little bit when I was in Colorado. I was glassing around and there was this one little basin, up at the very head where it was like a nice green basin, some rolly hills in it. And I did see deer in there, but before I saw those, I found a deer in like a rock, just a cliffy, horrible looking place. And I thought, oh geez, you know, I think it's just important not to get fixated on where you think they're going to be. Mm-hmm. And you start glassing some timber and just using your eyeballs more too. And not just that glass. And then just like you said, getting back, glassing from a distance where you can see a whole bunch of country and work in from there. Instead of maybe vice versa, or, you know, just focusing so tightly to start out with.
No, that's an excellent point. And I will say, so those deer that I picked up that first night I went in there, they were on the slope where I wanted them to be, but they weren't in the place where I wanted them to be, right? Like
yeah.
they were up in this strip of like thick timber, and I was like, no, that's not, get out of there. Like that's not, yeah. not where I can get. And I was looking at these like boulders and these jack pines up above timberline that I wanted them to be there, right? Where you can put a stock on them. And I think that's exactly what you're saying is like, they definitely, you know, when you do take that step back, you can look at the whole picture and find out where the deer want to be, not necessarily where you want them to be in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. This is a little bit derailed, but it all comes for full circle. We've been having, so I just had a couple of guys out turkey hunting. I called a tom in for a kid. He came in silent and he was up over some brush, and all he had to do was just lean up on his knee and shoot the turkey over the brush. But he didn't. And I, you know, because of whatever, well, I was talking to, another guide that I know, and he's just like, that's like falling in love with a plan that you think is going to happen instead of like adapting to what's happening. And that's kind of what I think about when I'm scouting or even hunting, is like, where those deer get, or where you think those deer are going to be, it kind of goes into what you, how you think a plan is going to go.
Yeah.
And so being able to adapt and just kind of keep your brain open to like, don't fall in love with the plan or the vision or the video that you saw on somebody's YouTube channel. Cause that's just not, it's so funny. Cause like every time, you know, I get these visions also, but it seems like every time I find a deer bedded up and like a good buck or whatever, it's never, ever, ever like I think it's going to be. I'm like, this is going to be much harder than I think in my brain.
Oh, totally. I did exactly what you're talking about, where you go into a spot, you're like, I'm looking at this hillside and there's a bunch of juniper trees. This is in the low country in Wyoming. And there's a bunch of juniper trees, and there's a creek at the bottom with some hay fields. And I looked at it on the map and I go, that's where the deer are going to bed in the junipers and go down to the hay. Right. Like
yeah.
that was the game plan. And we roll up, Jess was with me, and we rolled up to that spot, and she's like, dude, you dummy, this is the better habitat. And we look off to like the left, like 180 degrees from where I wanted to be glassing. And there was a pile of deer up on that hillside, you know? And like, if yeah. she hadn't been with me to point it out, like I would have been sitting there glassing the junipers, wouldn't seen anything in comparison. So yeah, no, that's, you're exactly right. You can't set a schedule or a plan for something that is not under your control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think like some of that stuff is, it's so basic, you know, and it's not really like logistically, what do I look for when I'm scouting for mule deer, like some of the habitat or whatever. And I think we could dive into the habitat just a little bit next. But the mental side of it is so important, I think, mm-hmm. in just things like that, because if you would have just stared there, or, you know, sat there and stared at the junipers,
with my back to the good
yes,
stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And not like looked around, you would have never seen those. And I think that happens so much all the time, just because it's like, no, this is what I saw, a picture of somebody that had a deer in a basin, in a nice green basin, and that's where they should be. And so you just kind of get fixated on that and just forget about the rest. So I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but you know, it's just really important.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. The other thing, I think a lot of folks are afraid of going out and getting skunked when they go scouting, for example, or hunting for that matter. But, it goes back to that hunting in the same spot year after year, you know, but I remember my brother and I and my buddy were going elk hunting in this, wilderness area in Oregon, like the first year that we were trying to basically like branch out from what we had kind of always known. And, basically what had happened is I had some access to Fort National Forest through like these folks that we ran cows with, would let us through, and we'd go hunt elk up there or whatever. And, mm-hmm. And deer. And then, basically their daughter married this guy who liked to hunt, and obviously they've got more rights, and I wasn't going to go, you know, to this place, and I wasn't going to go like, you know, mess up this other guy's spot. So, okay, time to go find a new place. And that first like season that we were trying to figure things out, man, we went on so many bow hikes and didn't see a dang animal like over and over again. But you know what? You like build a catalog of like what you know isn't working. And then what you know, like when you do stumble into the right zone or the right animals, mm-hmm. Or the right habitat, that's when you then build the good set of knowledge. And it's kind of like that whole teaching a person to fish instead of giving them a fish, right? If you're able to go out there and teach yourself how to find these spots, you can do it anywhere. In my opinion, I think you can. This is coming from someone who I've not really had a whole bunch of success in different areas, but it just gives you that confidence that like, if you can go find a deer here or an elk here, like you can probably replicate it in another state.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've told this story a bit, but you know, me going in that I killed a buck in 2017 in Wyoming, and I went in there so many times and glassed places where I don't think a deer lived because I thought that that's where they needed to be. And it wasn't till like one night, one afternoon, I hadn't seen a deer and I popped smoke and was like, I'm going to bomb down to the vehicle and I'm going to move areas a little bit overnight. And then the next morning I'll glass this new area. Well, on my way down, I get pretty dang close to the vehicle and I start bumping into deer. And then that's where I found the buck that I ended up shooting. That's when I found him.
But, that was a nice deer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that was a really good buck. But then like once I started looking there more where he was and started looking for him more and watching him on the weekends, other bucks started popping up. And then I'm like, oh, this would have been nice to know like forever ago. yeah. You know, and you start watching them and other bucks start popping up and then you notice the habitat that they're in and kind of where they like to be. And then you can take that and you can take it, I don't want to say to like every state, because I think it's all a little bit different, but at least in that area, I can take that knowledge, look at see what it looks like on Google Earth, and then I can just start bouncing around and being like, okay, this is what this looks like. So, you know, this drainage, three drainages over that I've never been into, it looks a heck of a lot like that. So there's probably deer in there. And it just takes time too. That's the other thing is that took me a lot of time to figure that out. And there's just no easy button, unfortunately.
That's so right. I think that's exactly right. There's no easy button. There's no like easy button for being in the woods. I think maybe if you listen to this and then realize that there's no easy button, it can give you a lot more, you get a lot more, buffer for screwing things up, right? You don't get frustrated so easily, because I feel like that's the variable. As long as you don't get frustrated or don't give up, then you can still figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just being in the woods, right? I mean, just like you're saying, mm-hmm. is really big deal. Just putting some time out there. I was going to ask a little bit on habitat. It's so different because, you know, going from the low country to the high country is so different. But one thing that I really believe in, and Robbie and Travis and I talked about this on their podcast or their podcast we did when they were in Colorado, we talked about edges and how deer seem to like edges. We're like one, I don't even know. The only edge I can think of is like going from straight up grass into like some sagebrush or something. It seems like I see a lot of deer around those areas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this is, and this is maybe where tuning into some of this, kind of biology and also tuning into the managers as in the biologists, on the ground is really important because you'll get descriptions of what the habitat that deer population likes to live in. Like you'll get a description of what that looks like. I was reading this one from Oregon and they like had a study that said that deer like less than 60% cover, right? So like if you just had this map and you were able to say like trees is 100% cover and then, you know, sagebrush is 0% cover. Mm-hmm. And so they want 60%, you know, And so finding out what, you know, that kind of information, but doing a little internet sleuthing, I think is really important because, you know, then you'll have other populations like, I won't give that area away. You'll have other populations mm-hmm. where deer will like actually just hang out in sagebrush. Like there's not, you know, like you're saying, there's not, these hardcore defined edges, but by golly, like that sagebrush gets really deep in the draws and you can't see the deer, and that serves as an edge, you know, or like down in the, you know, kind of flats, you'll find really tall sagebrush or whatever the case is, where that actually is an edge, you know, right where that rolls over. Like that's what you're talking about. And you can glass them when they're up and feeding and, but you can't really see them when they're down. And I think that's totally right. I think that those edges are important to look for too, but yeah. That's exactly kind of what I think a lot of the, you know, the science is saying is that the deer are on the edges. And if you think about it, man, that's where the best grub is too. You know, where you can find the brush that they tend to like to eat most and stuff like that, especially in timber and mountain type deer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know we talked last year, you were doing a count, I think, in an area I've been in a bit, and that's kind of how it is there. It's like the high country, the really nice green looking basins that look a lot like maybe what there is in Colorado or something like that. That's just not where the deer are in that,
right,
in that area. And quite honestly, it drives me insane because I really want them to be there, but they're just not. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, that is another thing that's really important is there's some good data out there that shows you kind of where deer like to hang out. I won't give you guys exactly where it is, 'cause I think it's becoming kind of an issue that people know about it. But you can, you know, like on that study we were on, we found multiple really nice bucks, not what we were expecting, but they were in places where good freaking luck trying to kill them with a bow, because they were in the timber, the thickest timber. Then they would just, that's where they were bedding. And then they'd come out in these little sagebrush like hillsides during the day or during the morning and night. And you're just like, holy cow, I had no idea they were in here if you hadn't like tried to look in this spot. But sure enough, like they're there. Now trying to kill them, that's a different, you know, that's a whole different task.
Different
clearly
ball
you got
game.
It figured out, but
yeah. Yeah. It's just tricky. It's just tricky. So yeah, I would say, you know, if you're coming out to even go into a place that you've been before, do just like Jaden said and look into more of the habitat, whether that's like talking to a biologist about what they like to eat and maybe going at it from that perspective instead of you know, just
looking for spots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, totally. And man, I'm just looking on a quick search and you can find information. It's there. You know, you would probably have 10 times more luck talking to biologists if you said, you know, I'm looking at this right now. This is a partial list of plant species and their value to mule deer. True mountain mahogany, excellent summer, winter, and fall forage, excellent hiding and escape cover, excellent fawning cover. Okay, Mr. Biologist, where can I find true mountain mahoganies like in this unit? You know, he is going to tell you right where they are. And that can really help you tune in. You know, I think that's kind of what you're getting at is if you teach yourself these things or just look them up real quick, you don't have to know every dandelion on the mountain, but like, just look up the kind of the key things and that can really help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is there any other tips, tricks, tactics you'd like to give people for scouting in anywhere for mule deer?
Oh man. You know, I think that we've touched on this more than anything, but just going to the same spot or spending time in an area and learning an area, is so important. Here's a quick story for you. The spot where I shot my deer last year was one that Jess knew about. Jess, she had been in there archery deer hunting, and it's like this little tiny BLM piece that not a lot of people would consider going to check out. Right. But we went in there, found a pretty nice deer, and then I shot it. And then a couple days later, we went in there again to try to get a deer for Jess. And we passed this grandpa and his granddaughter going in this spot. And he's like, you know, there's some deer right here by the road normally. And we're like, no way. Like, we normally climb up to this glass and knob and do that whole program. And he's like, no, like, seriously, there was a 5-point and a 4-point here yesterday. And we're like, nah. We go and climb up to our glass and knob, not very far from where they were driving to. And she shoots this 4-point just straight from the freaking road. It was like a 2-tracky thing. You know, she was well off the road, like, legally, but yeah. you know, she goes out there and just shoots this thing. 'Cause her grandpa knew exactly where these deer like to hang out, and they didn't have to do, you know, they didn't have to shoot or hike very dang far, actually not at all, to find those deer. And I just think that was such a good lesson for me as someone who I just always will go be like, oh, I can beat someone into this spot. You know, I'm young and like to hike a lot, but those guys, you know, if you just figure out how the lay of the land works and how the critters use the properties that you're hunting, you know, and when I say properties, just like, you know, whether it's public or private land, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Figure out how they use that ground. And then you can, I think it makes a lot better hunters in general. And that doesn't just mean in season. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anytime, like make it a family event to go out and camp, and while they're sleeping in the morning, like, just go take a drive or something. Take a hike and just get that. Logistics are huge. And, you know, I was just actually talking about this with these turkey hunters, you know, like, obviously this is private land, but mm-hmm. a lot of what they're paying me for is the logistical stuff. It's to figure out, like, where the turkeys like to be, where they like to roost, where they like to travel through. You know, I do other things like, you know, setting the blinds up and making sure all that stuff is good to go. But that's all logistical stuff. And that's really what they're paying me for. So it's really important. It's very, very important, I guess, is what I'm getting at there.
Yeah, totally.
To get that logistical stuff down. Yep.
Have you told people that you're looking for guides?
No, but I found one.
Oh, you did? Okay, yep. Good.
Yep, I found one.
I was going to give you a plug there, but good deal. I'm sure, you know, you were kind of putting the call out on social media, and it looked like it would be such a fun time to go guide up in that country, but
man,
glad you guys got one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool. Yeah, I got a guy that can do the November and the December hunts, but I mean, I guess if anybody's interested in the future or would like to just, I guess, for me to have them on the radar, runningwaterhunting@gmail.com. Just look me up.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I did find somebody. So that'll be good. Kind of lighten the load a little bit. The meter was at about 110 last year for me by myself, and just couldn't do it.
You always got to run her to 110 to find out where you need to
go. Oh, where the line is?
Oh yeah.
Oh man, it's interesting too. It's actually, so people for this mule deer stuff too, like Jaden, you do all the Muley Monday stuff for Cody Rich's podcast, The Rich Outdoors. Mm-hmm. So people should definitely go check that out. But I was just listening to Cody's deal, and he's been doing all those entrepreneur podcasts. Mm-hmm. And those are awesome. Like, super top notch. So I was listening to the one with Brian Barney today, and they were talking about, like, that time management, overloading, and then getting people on to, like, getting yourself in a position where you can hire somebody and then make money other places as well. But anyways, that was just a plug for the Rich Outdoors podcast too, because it's been great.
Yeah, he's really taking it in a cool direction. You know, trying to provide more value for folks from, like, the perspective of, like, oh, you want to hunt more? Like, here's kind of how Cody is uses his entrepreneurship to set him up to really do that. I mean, the dude spends a pile of time chasing elk every year and hunting other species too. So I really like him. I kind of came to the outdoor world, quote unquote, for the same reason. I was like, man, I want to find out ways that I can go spend more time in the woods. And he's done a good job with that series. Plus we also have on our, and that's what you're talking about with the Muley Mondays, is that Patreon feed. That is just hardcore mule deer and elk information. So if anyone wants to check that out, man, we'd love to have you. It is also, we're trying to keep it small though, cause that way I can give away more secrets and Cody can give away more like high quality, kind of specifics that, really can hurt, if you can hurt a spot, if you give it, you know, too much more light a day. So
yeah,
that's kind of what's going on there
for sure. But yeah, if people are interested, I've heard it costs as much as 2 Red Bulls. So
A month. So, I appreciate that plug. That was really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks, man. We'll, I'm quite sure we'll have you on again sometime talking about knows what.
I love it. I love talking this stuff. And again, if anyone wants to look me up, I'm over on the Rock Slide forum. I love spending a bunch of time on there. And, you know, if my boss knew how much time I was on Rock Slide, he would, I probably wouldn't be calling him my boss anymore. Job.
It's
fine.
Exactly. But cool, man. And then everybody can find you on the Insta. It's just Jaden Bales, isn't it?
Yeah, got in on that thing earlier. It's just at Jaden Bales. So.
Perfect. Cool. All right, buddy. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, thank you.